We are live, episode 24. We don't have any commercials to bring to you with this right now. If you are listening to this on your favorite podcast, what do you call that, a podcast app?
Yeah.
Podcast medium. Regardless, if you're listening to us, you can watch us on YouTube. That also gives you appropriate B-roll when needed. And I guess the only advertisement we have is our Pure Wildlife Blends for our Food Plot Seed Company. Please check it out. Today, we're going to dive right in, and I made a diagram up there, and Jen said I could have been more creative
with it. Can they see the board okay?
So, yeah, I'd say they can see the board.
Yeah.
It would just be a guess they can see it. Actually, you know what? I should turn that camera up a little bit.
Yeah, I think you should.
Yeah, here, just a second.
Hold, please.
So let's just keep it going. We don't need to start over. Hey, LL Beams.
Yeah.
That's one of our five-year-olds. He'll be six this year. Jen found this, LL Beams. Pretty cool. And I wish we had Barry's antlers with us. They're up in the pole building. But we found Barry sheds, too. And the one side's pretty amazing. But this is pretty heavy right
we'll
here,
We'll show
too.
It to you on the next
so
one.
So good job, Jen.
Yeah, thank you. I'm still working on trying to find the other side. But he sure is neat. Really heavy. His other side is even more unique. So
yeah, very, very cool.
I hate to jinx us, but when we find the other side, we'll show you. At least I hope we do. But real neat deer. And really looking forward to him this year.
For you, for those of you that have followed for a while, we found Venti sheds from 2020-21. Last picture we had him was
pretty cool.
February of 21, and now we have them.
Yeah,
so,
real neat.
So, 3-year-old sheds we found, and they're definitely Ventis with drop tines. And
there's no denying
we'll bring
it.
Those to you at some point, too. Yeah. Hopefully, Dylan can show those in here, which is more on me to get him the footage.
Yeah, so get to it, Sturge.
But you had said that you thought I could be, I don't know if you were just saying that to mess with me, because you're always, you know, trying to make me feel bad and hurt my feelings and stuff like that, or if you're just...
Are you talking about your artwork, Picasso?
Yes.
Oh, you know, the thing that I think...
You said it should be more...
I would have churched it up a little bit. Maybe
churched
made,
it up?
Yeah, maybe made the G a little different. Would have slanted your T a little bit more. Other than that, looks nice.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Well, you'd said it. You thought I should have been more creative.
Well, sometimes
you can
be. And
that's all, just with the letters?
Yes, just with the letters. Okay. Maybe different colors in the
this
letters.
This is a topic that's near and dear to... Jen and I's heart and everything we do, I would say.
Yeah. Pheasant, rabbit,
yes.
Turkey.
And it's kind of interesting because, you know, I've been doing this for long enough and you see it, we see it, but people will take things I say and run with it, no different than a politician, and they'll say a certain thing and then news outlets run with it as if that was gospel, totally taken out of context. That happens over and over again. And I've been saying the same thing for decades.
Mm-hmm.
So if people just look and see, and one of those is on diversity. And we really like things on our property. What's your favorite animal that we manage for on the property?
I got to say it's pheasant. And
really?
I have to. Well, other than whitetail. Whitetail takes number one.
Yeah,
but
what'd you say outside of whitetail?
Outside of whitetail, I'd say pheasant. Rabbits are cool, but I think pheasant, there's not a lot of places that you go where you have a good pheasant habitat. And we have that, and it's something that we've been working so hard to do
right.
in the last few years. So now we hear them almost every day outside the house, when we're on the property.
We hear them while we're in the house.
Yeah, right, that too. I see them when I'm in the office, you know,
yeah,
just
we
running
saw one
across
yesterday
the yard.
Ran across the driveway.
I saw another one here behind the house over by the Hermit on my way out from from Brush Hoggin, beautiful male. So I would say pheasant is the most rewarding for me. What about you?
Pheasant is the one where we call them indicator species. If you around here, if you have grouse, pheasant, rabbit, and turkey nesting, those are all indications that you have good habitat. That's the way I look at it. So people love pheasant. And to me, I guess what's part of it is people don't understand why there are not pheasant populations. And that's what we're talking about. So when you get pheasant, you're doing something different than a lot of people do that spend thousands and sometimes tens of thousands of dollars to do
mm-hmm.
and try to accomplish. And most people out there doing it are not doing it effectively, and there's a big fat reason why.
Yeah.
And so pheasant, I think it's kind of one of those like, yeah, see, I told you, this is how you do it. This is how you do it.
Yep.
And so that pheasant, grouse.
Yep.
Yes, Sunday with Colin.
Sunday, that was really cool. And even Colin mentioned these are probably the only two grouse in southeastern Minnesota.
Well, the cool thing with that, too, is that and we told Colin, we said, well, this is just one spot on the land where we see grouse.
Yeah.
So we had seen grouse on the back 67. And then by Jim's plot.
Yep, you'd seen them over there. And then I heard Drummond, where we saw the ones on Sunday, and yeah. During hunting season.
Right.
You know, remember, I think I counted that one night I was sitting in the stand, I heard a drum like 13 times, I think.
Yeah, so like three main locations on the property.
Right.
We see grouse. And so it's not just that we have a couple here and there. We never planted any grouse, so it's kind of cool. They're just here.
Really
and,
neat.
And it's because of all our cuttings. Rabbits are everywhere. So it's kind of like, yeah, I think rabbits are cool. I used to have beagles and run them. Mm-hmm. But rabbits are one of the easier ones to get out of those. And then what about turkey? Poult.
Oh.
So we got to see poult last year, like in person.
Yeah, and really for the first time in a few years. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. I hadn't seen poult before, and it was
in large groups.
We saw it multiple times in different locations.
Right.
Which is really cool, too.
Yeah, really neat.
We haven't seen pheasant chicks.
You're right. We haven't. Yeah.
And so hopefully
this year. Hopefully this year.
We saw hens. I mean, we have them. They're just so spooky.
Yeah.
A lot of times you don't realize how many pheasant are there. Of course, you have to hear them. I mean, you'll hear roosters. But, you know, that's the thing. You have to know that you have to just take some faith that they're there, but we hear roosters all the time. And we hear roosters in how many locations on the property? 6 or 7 or 8. Oof. They're scattered pretty good.
Yeah. No.
So, which is reflective of the cover we have.
They are.
So, with that being said, you know, I would say pheasant, turkey, poult, really close, grouse, or they're all rabbits. I guess they're too easy. I guess what's harder to... You know, grouse, if you go out and you have a lot of cuttings, hardwood regeneration, and you'll probably have them. Mm-hmm. I know some people that was in the UP, the grouse are down this year. You know, as a family, they shot 152 last year, and this year they've only gotten 26. It's kind of like rabbits. You know, we went out to one spot along the Sini stretch, and we had a great run. We actually shot 3 snowshoe hares, and we had about 7 dogs. 3 or 4 guys, and we shot 3. We get back to the trucks, and this is only over after about 2.5 hours, somewhere around there. Great runs. We had some long runs. It was fun. Dogs did great. We get back to the cars and vehicles, and my friend said, hey, I got to apologize. You know, we didn't have a really good hunt. You know, last time we were here, we shot 30-some, and then the time before that, and then we shot 15, and now we only shot 3. And he started to explain how these rabbits, they move from island to island in the cover, and then you just don't see them anymore. And I'm like, well, no, they're all dead. That's part of the fluctuations. And, you know, grouse are down this year. We shot 150-some last year. We only got 20-some this year. Well, it's because you shot so many stinking. So that's a difference, too. We're not shooting pheasant yet, shooting grouse yet on the land if we feel like we have a good population. Especially with the pheasant and rabbits, we talk about we can't wait for Jackson.
Oh my gosh!
Can you imagine him out there with
he's always going to want to be out there, always and,
hunting for small game.
Yeah, he's going to always want to be out there.
So I grew up pellet gun hunting rabbits, so that's kind of.
Hopefully, Jackson uses the same one.
Yeah, Sheridan 20 caliber.
Pretty cool.
Jen got me one for Christmas a couple Christmases ago, and it was all the way from 1982.
Yeah, I think so, actually.
Okay, yeah, which is when I...
Pretty neat.
Mine was either 81 or 82, and someone stole it in college. And so Jen knew that, and she knew how much I loved, you know, using that pellet and learned how to shoot on it, that pellet gun, boxes and boxes, 500 rounds at a time shooting it. So she got me those two.
Right. The boxes. So should be good between you and Jackson. Hopefully you can capitalize on something.
Yeah, and so I mentioned... we do things a little bit differently. And I wrote up on the board here 2 illustrations, good and bad. And I think people confuse diversity a lot. What's diversity mean to you? Big picture wise, what's diversity mean to you, Jen?
Different things in the same area.
So what do you mean by that? All mixed together?
No.
Like in a pot? Or is it more...
It's more structural. Very much more structural. I think your description, Picasso, on the board really talks about that. You know, as far as switchgrass, pollinators, shrubs, hardwood, regen, they're all used for different things. You know, the switchgrass can be used as an escape cover. You know, whereas your hardwood regen can be really used for more of where they're going to be doing their nesting habitat.
And grouse.
Yeah. You know, for a bunch of these species that we're talking about.
Now, shrubs are a little bit different because if you're planting everything in, with a tractor,
sure,
then you're not throwing out shrubs at the same time you're seeding.
Right.
So that's the problem. You have this 40-acre parcel over on the right, and I've seen 40 acres like this where there's a CRP mix or a pheasant mix. It has Forbs forages, various types of grass in it. And this is the latest and greatest CRP or pheasant mix. We're supposed to be great for wildlife, pollinators, birds, butterflies, bees. Great for maybe May, June, July through August, September. Everything dries out, dies. And because that grass is not structurally sound enough to stand up during the winter, it falls over and there's no cover.
Yeah.
And so someone will say that mix is diverse, that 40-acre mix is diverse. No, it's all the same. So it's a monoculture because it's all the same across the entire landscape. And this is a concept that we need to get through in this video that to me I thought was critical enough to do a video on this for our podcast because it's not only important for you to understand, but it's important for us and what we love to do.
Mm-hmm. You know, and all this stuff that we're, you know, that we're doing on the property, especially to, you know, for the management of whitetails, if we're managing for whitetails by creating edges, we're also doing good habitat management for turkeys, pheasant, grouse, rabbits. Mm. You know, so they all kind of go and coincide to one. But if we're managing habitat for whitetail, then we get all the rest.
Right.
If we're just managing habitat for rabbits and making rabbit huts and, you know, doing little things like that, we're not doing other habitat stuff for all the rest.
Right. Yeah. So if we just try to create habitat,
Which is a fun thing to do.
It is. But we're missing out on pheasant cover. We're missing out on deer cover. And it's not necessarily exactly related to grouse.
No.
And so it could be somewhat escape for grouse and overhead canopy protection.
Yeah, but you're missing a lot of big pieces.
Right. And this is where people take things out of context where they'll talk about that I promote planting a monoculture of switchgrass, and I do, because you have to have solid switch so that it actually has a chance to stay up during the wintertime. If you dilute it with big blue stem, little blue stem, Indian grass, Forbs, forages, it falls over. So it provides zero cover.
But can you talk about why it falls over? Because you're putting all those other grasses in it, right? And then so it's going to take that stem, and instead of it being a thicker stem,
it becomes half the size, half the diameter, half the height,
right? And so at that point, it's easier to fall down.
Even if you switchgrass should be planted at 6 to 8 pounds per acre because you want thick, full switchgrass. If you plant it at 4 pounds per acre, it becomes so diluted, or 3 pounds, not all the time, but a lot of the time. And certainly as you get closer to 3 pounds, 2 pounds, a lot of the mixes have a pound, pound and a half. So it's just not enough to actually provide cover for the wintertime. Not enough cover for deer, not enough cover for wildlife. So we recommend 8 pounds per acre. And it's really important that you have that solid stand, because if you have that just a little bit of switch here and there, for one thing, a lot of times the taller grass shades it out and kills it.
Sure.
And then when that happens, you just don't have any other grass in there that's going to stand up to a typical northern winter. Now, some of those grass blends work well down Missouri, Kentucky, West Virginia, Tennessee, because you don't get those strong winters where it's going to blow down that grass.
Sure.
But just because you add a bunch of grass together doesn't mean it's diverse. It's just more grass. That's like saying we need a diverse pine plantation. So we're mixing red pine, white pine, jack pine, scotch pine, Norway pine all together. Mm-hmm. That's somehow diversity. No, it's just more pine. It's just more conifer. It's in that same conifer class. That picture on the right, see all those different things mixed in one 40-acre field. It's a monoculture. Different over here, we like using a base form of cover. The base form of cover, switchgrass is so easy. It can be established in 2 years. So how many of our fields, we have so many fields that are 5 to 7 feet tall after 2 years.
Yeah.
First year, sometimes 40 inches, 4 feet. So people say, no, this takes time, and it does not take time.
Yeah.
That structure of switchgrass, that base cover, that is a limiting factor for all wildlife, is critical to have. If you don't have base cover, then you don't have wildlife. And so people will say there's declining turkey populations, declining pheasant populations. I even heard someone blame it on herbicides in fields because that leaves more trash in the fields if you don't use herbicide, and therefore pheasants or turkey have more cover because that's there, or more garbage out in the fields. The bottom line is if they don't have cover during the wintertime, they're dead.
Right.
They don't have any place.
They need that escape cover from those predators.
And if you go back, you know, farming community in the 90s that I was a part of, late 80s, they were embarrassed if they had weeds in their field. They would actually go out there and hand pull them. And so if other fields around the area didn't have weeds, they looked at those fields like, ugh, man, those are beautiful fields. I wish ours were like those.
And they felt embarrassed, right?
Yeah, that was a pride thing. And so it wasn't like in the 60s, 70s, they had trashy fields. They'd meticulously disc, plow, chisel plow over and over again. That's why we lost so much topsoil. But they had to set those weeds back enough so that they had a good crop. The problem is somewhere in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, it started trending from full fence rows to no fence rows. If there is briars and weeds and garbage on the outside of a woods, those were all taken right back to the hardwood timber. Sometimes the hardwoods were even taken out in favor of planting ag fields in their place. Mm-hmm. So we lost all the edge cover, all the fence rows, and therefore no cover. And that's why there's no pheasant populations.
Or turkey.
There's no turkey. Someone asked me the other day, they said, what can you plant for food plots that'll promote birds? Nothing. You have to have the cover first. That mm-hmm. food that you plant for them, that could be a small sliver of a percentile. It's very small. But if you don't have the cover, you're not going to have any of this. And that's where, like, all the food plots we plant out here, that's not giving us our turkey population, grouse,
pheasant,
rabbit, pheasant at all. It's purely that cover. And so the problem is, again, CRP mix on the right. There's no CRP mix out there that is going to give you good cover, especially in the north half of the country, northern 40% of the country, because if it lays down during the fall and winter, those critters have to go somewhere, and they just plain die. They don't have enough cover from above. Rabbits need cover from above. And so we're going to go through each one of these really quick. And I like to take a field and surround it and switch. Now, on the inside, you could have switch pockets of 50%. Then you want shrub pockets. You could have early successional growth, which equals forbs. Forage is kind of like a pollinator blend. Pollinator blend is just more specific to that. Then on the edge of the woods, you have hardwood regeneration. We have a lot of our rabbit huts right on the edge of the woods where we use hinge cuts over the top. So now you have switchgrass, pollinator, shrubs, rabbit huts, hardwood regen, briars, and then finally the woods. That's truly a soft edge where it extends out 100 yards, 50 yards, not just food plot, hinge cut, hardwoods.
Well, and even too, not just on our food plots, but we also on our trail system that goes around that top edge, a majority of that is switchgrass on the edge as well, along with, you've extended that edge, and you've, you know, cut some aspens down in it as well. A little edge feathering. Yeah.
Yeah. And so let's go through pheasant.
Okay.
We plant, we say we have about 3 miles of switch, and that's about accurate.
Mm, it's really pretty.
So what's the saying with pheasant? If they fly,
they die.
And so you need long lines where they can run. Think fence rows in the 80s, 90s, some of the 2000s. They could run. Our fence rows in the woods we used to hunt in the Thumb, it's a half mile to the woods. And there's a 120-acre ag field on the right, 160 ag field on the left. That fence row was 20 feet wide, and areas had apple trees, briars, vines, hardwood growth, trees that get cut down here and there. But it was just a big tangled mess. We actually sat it in blinds. My dad shot his first deer sitting in a tangled vine at a quarter mile out.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. Fence row's gone now. The three more rows on each side or whatever it equaled. Times a half mile, you're talking another acre, 2 acres. So you're talking another 400 bushel, 300 bushel of corn.
To a farmer, which is quite a bit.
Right. So that's where all these fence rows go. And so that's where those long lines that pheasants need to run and stay mm-hmm. alive are gone. And that's a big difference.
A huge difference.
And so you have to have that, and that's what the switchgrass provides. Now the shrub cover. Where did we see the grouse the other day?
In the dogwood.
Yeah, in our standing gray dogwood.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And we see a lot of our pheasants run through there. And when they start running, you know, they're not going to fly.
No, they know they're safe. They can't be seen from above.
No, and they just disappear. You know, I mean, they're fast. But yeah, those grouse that we saw were super, super cool in there. But yeah, they're safe in there. There's no predators from above aren't going to get them.
And that's where, like, deer, they're not hiding from planes and birds.
No.
But grouse are. Pheasant are. Turkey poult are.
Rabbits are.
Yeah. So it's all critical. They have to have that vertical cover
mm-hmm.
and that canopy cover. So you have that escape cover for switch. Then you have the winter cover, which is in the form of the shrubs, gray dogwood, mm-hmm. red osier dogwood, the briars, a hardwood regen. Was it Fred?
No, this is Beetle Ben.
Beetle Ben.
Yeah, Beetle Ben is going to take a ride.
He hit something. He gone. But so you have that winter cover in the shrubs because unlike this winter our switchgrass stayed up all winter. Very, very strong. Some of it 7-8 feet tall. Lots and lots and lots of cover for rabbits. And
I always wonder what's in there, you know, when we drive by or we drive through it. Sometimes I'm like,
you're wondering snake.
I am. And I know they're not in there, but
I didn't show you something on Instagram. I saw this morning.
Good. I don't need to see
it. It was two rattlesnakes. I don't know if they're mating, but they're standing up in the blue bonnet field in the spring. And they were like standing up, going
probably,
at each other.
Yeah. But where?
Kind of like this.
In like
this.
Tennessee. Yeah, like, don't even do it. Don't do it. Keep your hands to yourself. Remember the rules that you learned in elementary school. But I always wonder what's in there. You know, there's other creatures and stuff in there too. But with switchgrass, we've hit on this and talked about this before. But even with grouse, you could argue that they'll go in there during, you know, a heavy snow or something like that. They'll go in there and burrow in there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So between the switchgrass and the shrubs, that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But then the grouse need hardwood regeneration. And that's where they fly through hardwoods for their escape. Grouse typically aren't flying across an open field like a pheasant would be. They're flying through the woods, through trees. It's amazing. They just dart and shoot.
I know.
So it's overlapping. The shrubs are used in combination with the grass for the pheasant. The hardwood regen is used in combination with the shrubs for the grouse, mostly. And then that hardwood regen area is perfect for turkey nesting and poult. So a lot of times we've almost stepped on them. They've been in the briars, hardwood regen, kind of between the shrubs and grasses and the hardwoods, you know, that woody edge right there.
It's those peaceful moments that you're walking through the woods, shed hunting or morel hunting, and it's quiet and nice, and all of a sudden it's just like...
Oh, it's like a dinosaur taking off. And I've been up to 3-4 feet away from one. I can't believe it. They're just there.
Oh, they blend in. You don't even see them.
They don't move until the last second.
Yeah, you don't even see them.
But they need that edge cover, and then rabbits. Rabbits need rabbits will take it all, and that's why I think that if you have a couple of those, you know, I have an illustration up here. We have switchgrass. Then we have pollinator and hardwood pollinator and early successional growth areas. And then we have shrubs in red, and then the hardwood regen. You have those layers. That's diversity. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't have the strength of each one of those together, the length of the switch, the pockets of the shrubs, the pockets and lengths of the pollinator blend next to that cover, the hardwood regen edge, if you don't have each one of those in large format and separate from the other ones, then each one dilutes it. Mm-hmm. For example, hardwood regeneration shades out switchgrass, shrubs, and briars. And so each one of these switchgrass can outcompete the pollinator blends. It's taller, shades it out completely. And so you want to separate all this. And when you have that separation, big picture, you actually have diversity.
Yeah. You know, and when it's separated too, the girl side of me, and hopefully Dylan can show some of this, just below the house, we have switchgrass and pollinator and really nice edge, and it's all separated.
Rabbit huts
too. Hard it's all regen. Separated. And in, yeah. the, in the summertime and in the fall, it's just beautiful, you yeah. know, and you can see those, you know, the, those different layers, and it's really pretty. However, you know that what it's doing is working with all the habitat that we have just around the house.
In its strength.
Yes.
So if you mix that switchgrass lines we have out here, for one, no screening. So then the deer that are on the inside can see out, you can see in, it spooks them. And so by not having that nice, strong edge of switch, you're pushing the deer further back. I'll give an illustration. CRP Field in Wisconsin, where I hunted for a long time, there was about 42 acres of CRP. And we'd have some incredible bedding areas that were just inside the woods, in the top of a hollow, off the side of a point where there's a bench just 10 yards in or 20 yards in. They mowed that CRP in August. And so by the time I got into hunting season, it only grew about a foot tall. Well, what did that do? Those deer that were sitting next to that CRP that was about 3 feet tall, 3.5, it doesn't have to be that high to be an effective screen when it's 42 acres. You know, we're not just talking about 10 feet of CRP or 20 feet or 30. We're talking about 100 feet or more of CRP. Well, then deer can bed behind that into the woods. But then when it's mowed all down, what you're supposed to do, then the deer now go 100 yards into the woods, 150 yards of the woods. So when we have a mile and a half edge and you're taking 150 yards, you're not just losing 10 acres, 20 acres. You're losing dozens of acres. Mm-hmm. Or more to where you could have actually held deer and held wildlife. And that's where that switchgrass, 6-7 feet tall, and you can get away with a lot less. You know, it doesn't have to be 80 feet wide to hide something behind it. And even then, if it gets all flattened, then middle of January, February, if the critters were relying on that cover, then they're gone. They're either out of the area or they're dead.
Right.
And when it comes to pheasant, grouse, rabbits, they don't just migrate somewhere else. They just stay there, get picked off by predators and die.
Yeah.
And so that's where that switchgrass gives you that hard edge. It doesn't have to be that wide. We talk about if it's hiding deer from deer or critters from each other, you want more like 6 to 8 feet, like on the inside of a food plot. Mm-hmm. The outside of a food plot where people might walk by, if it's a high traffic people area, we might want 50 feet wide.
Sure.
If it's a general traffic area where you're walking 200 feet away and there's a switchgrass barrier, I might want it to be more like 15 feet wide, 20 feet wide, something.
How
like
wide do you think it is on the top of the 67 up there by the power lines?
I would say that is, would you say it's 15 yards?
Probably, including where we're going to plant the new stuff this year.
Well, that's another...
10?
That's another 15, so we'll probably have about... 80 to 90 feet of switch.
Mm-hmm. And
we'll have that on either side of our tunnel. Now, I was able to run by Barry last year.
And he had no idea you were there.
I got out of the redneck. He was in the corn. I ran down 200 yards through the tunnel of switch, got under the into a chair.
And you were able to do that because that's a higher traffic area and it's so open up there.
And I got a shot missed. But, you know, that was the end of that story. And Jen found the sheds right by where I missed.
You're welcome.
I scared him so
bad. I put Jackson's cup next to him. I let you walk up to him first. Well, technically second. Actually, I drove up.
It was nice to see him laying there.
It was
Thank
nice.
You.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks,
man. Yeah.
But anyways, that switchgrass there, because there's a big ag field, there's people out in that ag field, there's other hunters, we wanted that to be even wider. So we found out we own another acre into the ag field there, and we're going to take it and plant it and switch. Mm-hmm. We don't want deer there. We already have lots of shrubs in that area. Now, on the inside of the food plot, it's about 12 feet all the way around. It's one spreader width.
Yeah.
All the way around. And then, so on the hard edge where we have access, that's all switch. And then it's like a big V. It's a point. So that switch all the way around, or that food plot all the way around, will have 12 feet on the other two sides out to the point. And then on the sides of those, we're cutting the woods to feather those into the early successional growth of oaks, red cedar, briars, goldenrods,
great
grasses.
Great dogwood.
And then you have that, the switch, and some of those areas are 100 feet wide or more, 150 feet wide, 50 yards wide or
for
more.
For sure. Yeah,
sumac, gray dogwood. Yeah, yeah,
there's so much diversity in there.
Yeah, so imagine having the hardwood regen edge where we're tipping the hardwood into the field, letting sunlight get into it from both sides. And then we're getting hardwood regen there, and then all that diversity, then switch, then food.
Yeah, we
so
and
we already have a bunch of pheasant back there.
I was going to say, everything we've been talking about, it's all there.
Yeah, we're seeing multiple roosters a lot of times at a time.
Yeah, super cool. When Dylan and I were turkey hunting back there last year, you don't want to see deer when you turkey hunt, but it's fine when you do. And we had this tom coming up this trail we were sitting on, and then we have this, you know, doe and fawn coming down. And they're making eye contact with each other. And I need that turkey to come up. And that turkey got spooked by that deer. So it was like, you don't want to see deer. And then all of a sudden you're seeing deer. And here we are. And
yeah.
Whatever. It's fine.
Yeah, that's...
We had a nice hunt, though. That's all that matters.
We just run into tons of wildlife.
We do. And that's the whole point of this episode.
And the whole point, you know, we go... Like I said, I've been to 1,600 clients. We're pushing around there. And... this is my 20th season going to clients around 26 states around the country, you know that. But I've seen many CRP fields and many pheasant fields that were specifically planted, native grasslands, to have pheasant. Pheasants planted, they all die and the cover's not working. And we're out there and we have to answer why. Why is this not working? It's not something we prescribed. But we have to answer and figure out why it's not working. Well, when you figure it out dozens of times over years on multiple properties, you see the same things happening over and over again. And that's why when people online, they'll say, oh, you got to do it this way, and it differs from what I say, they don't have a lot of experience. They haven't been to over 1,000 parcels or 1,500 parcels. They don't have the luxury of having Dylan, Joe, Kevin, and Wes go to properties times another 200, 250 a year. Mm-hmm. And we'll go to over 300 this year. We get lots of feedback. We're learning on every one. I challenge you to find one group in the entire country that goes to more properties than we do. So when I talk about experience, that really matters when you go look at these properties. And when you come, and it comes to CRP and Indian grass and native grass fields, and I'm standing 12, 15 years ago in a big blue stem field in Minnesota, and it's dead of winter, and it's flat, and they're telling me, yeah, this is the big blue stem field, and it's native grass field, and you can't even see any grass because it's just all snow. Like, well, where are the pheasant? You know, we don't have any. You know, like, they told us this would be good for wildlife. Well, it's good for some summer perching birds and butterflies and bees if there's some pollinators.
Some mice,
but, and I'm on another property in Minnesota. This is going back about 6 years, 5 years, and it's a whole 20-acre bottom that's in CRP. Not even a mouse, and they're wondering. You know, we were told this is good for wildlife, and it's a big dead area on our field or our property, and we have to answer to that. And you see the same consistency over and over and over again.
Yeah.
To the point where it's pretty easy if you don't have standing cover during the fall, if you don't in winter, and if you don't have those strengths of each area by itself. Yeah, that switchgrass field is a monoculture. That pollinator area is a monoculture. That shrub area is a monoculture. And that hardwood regen layer is a monoculture, even if there's different hardwoods, different shrubs, different pollinators, and even if there's different switchgrass varieties in there. It's all a monoculture by itself. But when you combine it with those other pieces, now it's actually true big picture diversity. When it's all planted in one field and it comes out of a planter behind a tractor, that's not diversity. That's a big giant monoculture where cover dies and it's done. And you have to look at it too. In the summertime, is not our limiting cover. Now, it could be in pheasant country where you have open ag fields with no fence rows and there's no actual cover from above. Those hawks don't care if it's wintertime or if it's summertime. If they can see those little critters, they're going to go down and pick them off. Mm-hmm. Owls, hawks, eagles, whatever it might be, birds of prey. So we kind of take offense to some of this stuff. It's just people are, you look very narrow-minded, you know, say that this is diversity because it comes out of this machine, it was this blend, mm-hmm. this is CRP, this pheasant mix, it was sold to me, it's the latest and greatest, you paid a lot of money. I've had clients, one of my favorite clients in Michigan that I've been to several times, he planted specifically, and I don't remember if it was 15 acres or 20 acres, it was at least 10, but it was a lot of acres, $600 an acre to plant, and 10 years later, there's zero pheasant, zero rabbits in it, and he's wondering why. It's because there's no solid switch in that grass. It's all diluted. Mm-hmm. There's no cover. That's what we see it over and over again. He was billed a planting of diversity, but until he actually put in conifer pockets, had early successional growth of shrubs, briars came in, and he offered that solid switch, he didn't have true diversity, because you need to celebrate each one of those as a whole, which is what we mm-hmm. love to do. Now, what do you like managing the most? We have diversity pockets, switchgrass pockets, our rabbit huts, and of course, a hardwood regen. You're not cutting with a chainsaw.
No.
Jen doesn't like me using a chainsaw, so
no, makes
if she
me
can
worried.
Limit me, I'm limiting her. She's not using one at all.
I don't
know. She can use one on the trails. We've been thought about getting a smaller saw for it.
I think one of the most rewarding is two. Planting switchgrass, most rewarding. And then two, that hardwood regen. There's a few places on the property where you cut last year that we've walked. I don't want to say it's spring yet, but I'm going to say it's spring this year for shed hunting. And it's been really neat to see that hardwood regen.
Like that
and
aspen.
Oh my gosh, they're everywhere. Shoots. Or where Colin and I walked the other day, on the edge below a bunch of those food plots. It's just incredible how thick it was in there, you know. So you know you're doing all the right things for, you know, the whitetail habitat. When you're doing that stuff, everything else is going to come into play for all of these, you know, other species that we're talking about. But right. Two, we're doing everything that we can to create better land management for those species. And just in the last couple of weeks, we've seen a fox that we haven't seen in a very long time. And we had a fisher on the property. And those are all really neat. That's fine. Those are all really neat animals to see. So what that tells us is that we're doing a lot of things correctly. And yeah, even if a fisher or a fox is a predator, that's okay. We're going to have a lot of turkeys. We're going to have pheasant. We have food for these predators to eat. So if we have good pheasant,
we have lots of chipmunks, squirrels,
right.
Rabbits, grouse, pheasant, turkeys, turkey poult.
We're going to have predators.
And it's not that we're trying to create food for predators. No. We've had four coyotes killed on the land this year, and we're going to work on the raccoons here pretty soon. But, you know, bottom line is more predators, they're here because we're doing a good job. Mm-hmm. And so if you guys are creating lots of wildlife and you're creating a great property, you're going to have lots of predators. And that kind of brings up the final point of all of this. You know what's interesting? If you put whitetails on a bullseye in the middle, that's going to encompass the better job you do with whitetails. Whitetails are creatures of edge and diversity, true edge and diversity. This field, you know what the edge is? The mile border around that 40-acre chunk. That's the only edge. Whatever habitat that's meeting on the outside, that's edge. That's it. Terrible wildlife property, terrible whitetail property. Edge is this, the entire edge of that switchgrass, the entire edge of that early successional growth, pollinator pocket area, shrubs, hardwood regen. Those are all true edges. You can't plant those all in one and have it be edge. That's just a monoculture. I hope that makes sense. And that brings us back to, again, whitetails. That's all encompassing. So if you do a great job with whitetails, that's all we talk about. Dylan and I talk about, and Dylan might have been the one that brought up that name indicator, but pheasant, grouse, rabbit, turkey poult, turkey nesting. That's those are the limiting factors. Mm. You know, that's cover. Those are the indicator species. If you have those, then you're going to have a great whitetail parcel. And we talked about pheasant, we talked about rabbits, we talked about turkey. One thing everyone thinks, well, turkey roosting trees, strutting areas. That's not what actually builds a turkey population. They have to have nesting area and escape cover for poult.
Right. It's not what keeps them alive.
Last year we saw those poults, they just dive into the switchgrass.
Yeah, they disappear.
And all of a sudden they're out the other end. They find a way to tunnel through there and they get away from predators that way. They got away from us that way.
Yeah, but it was really neat to see them. Yeah. Makes us know that we're doing the things right.
So don't fall into the trap that planting everything in one spot together, and I'll use the CRP mixes, pheasant mixes as a prime example of that, that you're somehow planting diversity because you have four grasses in there and eight forbs and forages. That's not diversity if it's all mixed and that's just what your field is. Terrible. Mm-hmm. You want solid blocks of the things that are forbs and forages separate. Grass, separate. Cover is grass. If the grass has fallen down during the winter, find a better grass. Mm-hmm. And that's where we plant switchgrass, because anywhere you plant it, it's going to stand up even to the worst winters. But that shouldn't be your only habitat. You should have the shrubs, early successional growth,
pollinator
regeneration. We add the rabbit huts. Every time we make a rabbit hut, it's probably 30, 40 feet wide, 20 feet deep.
Yeah.
And we have all the regen. It's great escape mm-hmm. cover for grouse, edge habitat, escape cover, and nesting habitat for turkey, escape cover for pheasant. And it's establishing a really good regen wall where deer can bed on the backside of it, and it brings them closer to the edge and maximizes your acres on the inside of the woods. So, mm-hmm.
Which brings you full circle back to whitetail.
Right.
Depth of cover.
Yeah. And I apologize about, you know, for that, guys, because a lot of times I talk about whitetails, whitetails, whitetails. We're thinking
everything.
Pheasant, grouse, rabbits, turkey poult. But again, it's kind of like a lot of the strategies we do are directly whitetail related that, oh, by the way, increase incredible wildlife populations. You know why there's a diminishing supply of turkeys across the country? It's not because of herbicide. It's not because there's chemicals in the ground. It's because there's a loss of cover. There's a loss of actually people doing it right to create that upland setting with the hardwood regen edge going into hardwoods that turkey need for nesting and escape cover for poult. Mm-hmm. Pheasant, same thing. Pheasant populations have gone down because of the lack of cover. When you provide the cover, and I just say that because when you provide the cover, they're there. That client in Michigan, he sat down, he had seven roosters he could hear the one evening. And so he could hear all this on his property where for 10 years he didn't have anything because he didn't have the cover. And so add the cover, and from what I'm seeing over and over again, they come. You know, maybe compared to years past, instead of 10, 15 pheasant living in a patch, maybe before you had 30, I really don't know. But the bottom line is you can get them back, and you can have them on your property if you have those long lines of movement with switch. And rabbits, like I said, are the easy one. Grouse, if you have hardwood regen. We, you know, my friend was out on Sunday, why don't you cut this aspen down? I'm like, well, we're saving that block for 7-8 years from now so that we can have this block cut now, this block cut then, this block cut 15 years from now. And you always have that regen and growth for a grouse, which, oh, by the way, deer love for cover and browse. So
there's always a plan.
There's always a plan. Can you add anything?
No, okay. I can't.
Mind is blank?
No, I mean, other than the Jen's got jokes.
Well, we'll do that really quick. I want to say one thing. This is episode 24. And as far as video, there's only been about five or six. Episode 24, a week from Saturday, Jen goes in to have Lily, our daughter. Mm-hmm. She'll be induced on March 30th. So we are really pumped, and that's coming down to the wire. So
it sure is.
If you guys are on episode 25 now, that means 2 days from now, if you happen to catch 25, is when Lily's coming in. So it's right down to the thick of things. You're doing a great job, babe. She was out. She found Barry's sheds on Sunday. Yesterday, I was spraying and you were brush hogging, and we're like going all the way back where it takes 15 minutes to drive back there. She was on the tractor bouncing around, getting Braxton Hicks, her belly's getting tight because she's so close.
Just doing my best.
Yeah, just to pass the time. But and I'm not saying I force her to do all this. She loves doing it. Mm-hmm. And so she works with the seed company and overseeing Wes. Wes is our seed manager. You know, we have lots of little pieces that help keep the whole machine running. Mm-hmm. But Jen's an integral part, and she doesn't slow down. And I imagine you'll slow down after Lily, but we were just talking about on the side-by-side. Jackson was on the side-by-side within 2 days?
I think so.
Two days after we got back from the hospital? He's out at maybe the day? I don't know. It was within 3 days at the most.
Yeah,
she was turkey hunting 3 weeks with him in the blind with me, too.
It's so, good time.
We'll still do our whitetail stuff, and we'll still be shooting these, but it's coming soon.
Real fast.
Jen's got jokes. Do you have a really good? And we skipped the mailbag. We'll just skip that, you know, for right now, because we went over some of these comments. You know, people, what can you plant for birds? Cover, not food plot.
Yep.
I'm thinking more cover. Cover, cover, cover.
Cover. Very important.
With deer, if you want big bucks, you got to have the cover. Good regen cover, and you have to have food plots on private land.
Yes,
or someone
very
else's
important.
Food plot program 2 miles away is going to suck them all the way.
Sure is.
Today's video. But anyways.
Back to Jen's Got Jokes. This really isn't a joke today. I'm going to go back to our conversation we were having with Autumn, Jeff's oldest daughter. Jeff has these zingers that just come to him, and I haven't quite figured out how he can think so fast on his feet, because I cannot. However, we're talking to her, and she was telling us that
stupid in my head.
Well, her and her fiance were shopping this weekend at Menards, and they were there to buy lattice for, I would imagine, their house and their deck. And anyways, I think I don't think she so much as got where we were shopping for lattice for our house. And Jeff looked at me, and he goes, "You know the perfect type of house that goes with lattice." And I go,
"What else?
But what, babe?
Ranch. Ranch goes with lettuce."
And I found that to be incredibly dumb, but incredibly funny. And even Autumn went, "Oh boy."
And this is why we're perfect for each other.
Yeah.
She loves this stuff. She can't get enough, right?
Right. Yeah. Just keep them coming, babe.
Okay. Thank you guys for watching. Really appreciate it. Again, reminder, we're really fired up about this stuff. Think about what true diversity is. It can't come in a bag. It comes by separating the powers of each one of those pieces. You can separate red cedar for switchgrass, different types of shrubs, small growth trees, briars, regen, goldenrod. But it has to be separate pieces, and you'll find true diversity.